Behold the head of Pertwee. Gaze into his eyes and your soul will be reflected back upon you.
What do you see, Jean?
I see the pain and suffering of a million people who have had to put up with my Morris dancing.
I see chocolate. Lots and lots and lots of chocolate.
I see something that is small and rather bemused.
I see nothing. I'm dead inside after watching the end of God Complex.
But wait, don't cry. I see something. I see Staggering Stories podcast number 115.
Oh.
Welcome, welcome, one and all, to Staggering Stories podcast 115.
115.
Oh, sorry, 115. Thank pedants. Pedants, I'm with you.
Peasants.
No, pedants. Hello, I'm Jean.
I'm Adam.
I'm Fake Keith.
And I
am a toenail.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
That's a bit of an anticlimax.
Yeah, just a toenail.
Just a toenail.
Well, the toenail on the...
It's because I think you're cuticle. Oh. All right, you're cuticle too.
And
there is a silence from the seat that is currently occupied by a load of McDonald's bags.
We have no Crumbly.
No, he's still off gallivanting.
Ooh.
And so, to the news with El Presidente! Doctor Who, the Colin Baker, as in
May
a
mashed potato and ketchup be upon him,
has been elected the honorary president of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, succeeding Nicholas Courtney, who held the position from 1997 until his death earlier this year. Yes, folks, we too are as surprised as you that WAS still exists.
Now.
Is it a position for life? I mean, is that it? Is he going to be there from now until...
I should think so.
Yeah.
Maybe, because I think John Pertwee had it before him.
So
maybe...
Yeah.
I think it's like the Pope. Once you've acquired the position, there's only one get-out clause.
It's quite worrying for the Colin Baker, isn't it?
He's acquired the position, isn't it?
Incest and funny hats. And
incest?
Incest.
Incest and funny hats. You will That's not talk about the Colin Baker in that way.
Karen, it's Dwaz we're talking about.
Yeah, come on.
Do we have any other news that isn't smutty?
Siffy allows alphas to survive another year. Serial perpetrator of science fiction side Siffy has deemed to bestow another 13-episode season on its new superhero series, Alphas. Siffy's president of original content, Mark Stern, said...
Alphas is a smart, innovative approach to a superhero franchise and has clearly caught on with our audiences. From the first-rate writing to the outstanding cast led by David
Smith.
Thank you. We're very proud of what was achieved in this first season and look forward to seeing the series fulfil even more of its creative potential in the second.
Give the man a handkerchief.
I haven't seen any Alphas.
No, we've been accused of not liking it, but we haven't actually seen it.
I don't think it's on over here yet.
I've seen trailers for it on another program which I got copies of that was transmitted in America, and I'm not saying what.
Okay.
But it was just trailed on that. But I don't think we've even seen any of it. I don't know if it's going to make it.
What's that thing that they keep advertising on BBC Two? It looks really cool and spooky.
That's Fades.
That's the one, yeah.
Which you were mentioning last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Jay who was here a couple of podcasts ago or so who had seen it.
Yes.
It was his fault. Jay, sort your life out.
Misfits. Nathan's Goodbye Special is now online.
Oh, Nathan.
To bridge the gap between the second and upcoming third seasons of E4's Misfits, there is now an 8-minute online special available.
Mm-hmm.
Entitled Vegas Baby, the special explains the departure of Nathan, Robert Sheehan, and introduces his replacement, Rudy, Joe Gilgan. As we reported back in May, Sheehan will not be returning for the third season, but would do this special online episode. Season 3 itself will return sometime in October on E4.
Well, so his star's on the rise slightly, because he's been in a couple of films.
Yeah,
very
he's
much done
so.
Films and stuff.
Isn't the internet really, really handy when you want to change characters or move a story forward, but can't be bothered to write a whole episode for it? You can do these little tabloids on the internet these days.
Yeah, I do wonder if they do a condensed thing on the beginning of the episode proper.
Previously.
Yeah, previously. You haven't seen it. You have to go online, but this is what happened.
Yeah.
This is where Nathan's gone. I don't know. It's going to be a bit weird if they don't.
Yeah.
Suddenly he's gone. You have to go online to...
We've got this new guy. Yeah.
Any more news?
Yes.
Yep. Walk for Liz. Ed Russell completes his 168-mile charity walk.
Respect.
Mm. Yes.
Doctor Who and Sarah Jane Adventures brand manager Ed Russell has completed his walk from the BBC Upper Boat Studios in Wales to Television Centre in London, raising money for Meadow House Hospice, who looked after Elizabeth Sladen. One day after completing his mammoth walk, Ed tweeted, "In case you are wondering, I feel fine, I feel great. Was out dancing till 4 a.m. and other than some nasty blisters, I'm on top form." So far, Ed has raised over 15,000 before gift aid is accounted for. But there is still some time to donate, so if you wish to, donate at www.justgiving.com/walkforliz/...
We'll put a link up.
Hopefully, we will.
You'll stick a link up.
Excellent effort.
Absolutely 6-7 days brilliant. Of straight walking.
Massive.
It's taken me less longer than that to drive from London to Cardiff.
And did you read on his Facebook page that Liz's daughter Sadie Miller got in touch because they found out he was doing it after he'd done it?
Well, he was nearly finished.
And they've made a donation, her and her dad, and have invited him out to dinner.
Oh,
well, I expect so. They do know each other, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
But 15 grand, that's a hell of an effort.
Let's hope a few more staggering stories listeners donate.
Yep.
Any more business? Any more news? Any addendums?
I have one final addendum that I only found out tonight as I was flicking. But Mr. Cabbage or Cabbatch or
Mr. Cabbage Patch.
Cabbage Patch Kid.
He's been having a busy year, and it's interesting to see whether he's actually going to be able to do any more Sherlock's.
They've
started trailering season 2 for Sherlock.
Mm.
But he's also appeared in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yep.
Due for release soon at a cinema near you.
Yeah, looks good. Looks really
and
good.
He's got 2 roles in The Hobbit.
Oh, really?
I know he's the dragon.
He's playing Smaug, the voice of the dragon, and the necromancer.
Ooh. Don't remember the necromancer.
I remember Smaug.
A.K.A. Sauron. That's what it says down here, a.k.a. Sauron.
Oh, right, yes.
Oh.
So and I think he's also got a big role in Spielberg's War Horse coming out around about Christmas.
War Horse.
Mm. So,
all his stuff is filmed, of course.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop him doing anything in the future. But,
as I said, it's debatable whether he's have room on his schedule for
anything. I don't know, he manages it.
Yeah. Another addendum, bit of a sad one.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Whitfield, who played Spartacus in the latest... Sand and Bloods, has died at the age of 39.
Wow.
He got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma 18 months ago leading to them to film a prequel while waiting for him to recover, and obviously that's not going to happen. No. So, best wishes to his family.
Yeah. Mm. It's a shocking age, really. Mm.
39, that's nothing.
Mm. And I mean, yeah. We've seen a lot of him on television. He did seem a fit young man. Yeah. And I don't mean just in the form, he's fit. He did seem
yes,
very healthy.
You did, yeah. Wore a loincloth well, did that one.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Any other news?
No. After that, I don't think.
After that, I think that's
we lowers the tone. Yes. We have been watching more of that funny thing that's in the room.
EastEnders, on the telly.
No, telly. That's the
telly.
Word.
Telly.
The goggle box.
And we've been watching some ancient old programme that's been looking around for ages, even longer than that. Doctor Who!
Oh,
We have been watching The Girl Who Waited and The God Complex.
I have one question to ask about The Girl Who Waited. Yep. Adam, are you enjoying your toast?
I am. Very good toast.
Yes, we should have started with toast.
He had another idea.
Why, pray tell, Adam, are you enjoying your toast?
Well,
please
see,
tell
Adam,
the listeners.
Adam had a bit of a tear going on. Just a bit of a tear. He was so upset by the end of The Girl Who Waited that he went for a drive and indulged in some retail therapy and now has a shiny new toaster.
It's got buttons and dials and
lights. Oh, it's got everything.
Massive, yeah.
If anything else bad happens in this series, he's going to refurbish his house.
So, basically, what you're saying is when you find a young lady with whom you wish to share your life, the only way she's going to get you to buy anything is to make you really, really upset. And then you'll go out and buy things for the home.
That's not a good idea.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are.
The Girl Who Waited.
Yes.
Yep.
You kind of knew something was going on by the fact that she walked out the TARDIS and was wearing trousers.
Yeah. I'll give you that, yeah.
Girl Who Waited has been described by people I work with as, that was damn good, bit sad at the end. Which is about as enthusiastic as they get about Doctor Who. The fact they watch it is a miracle.
Actually, some people seem to really hate it. It surprised me. It's divided opinion, rather.
God,
I don't know how they could hate it.
It's one of the best episodes I've ever seen, new or old.
See, I'm not in the it's the best episode of Who that I've ever seen.
I didn't say it was the best.
Some people have said
that,
but I don't agree.
But I have to say it's probably the best assistant-driven episode of
Definitely.
Who I've ever seen.
Definitely.
Not best overall. I think it's very hard to say an episode of Who is really, because it depends on what mood you're in,
well,
really.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
If in terms of an assistant-driven story, I think that's very probably the best I've seen them do.
Mm. So to give people a very brief rundown, Dr. Amy Rory land on planet, obviously not where the Doctor intended them to land,
or something.
Gets split up into two different time zones. Amy's time zone going very quick, Doctor's and Rory's time zone going quite normal.
Yeah, because I have to ask, if you're presented with a green and red button, which one do you generally press?
See, why didn't she say... Which button was it?
No, she presses the red,
the red button. The red for danger.
That's how she
the
rolls.
Woman's thick.
Scottish bint. And anyway, Amy ends up having to wait 36 years for the Doctor and Rory to find her, and is naturally enough a bit irked.
I'm trying to work out how old is Amy at this
She's going to be, what, 22,
about
23?
Yeah.
So she'd be knocking on 60. Didn't look bad for knocking on 60. Although, I have noticed, sorry to interrupt, Jack Harkness is a fixed point in time.
Yes.
The Doctor's death, apparently, is a fixed point in time.
Yes.
Amy Pond's hair colour is a fixed point in time.
I didn't notice that, you're right.
Yeah.
Knocking on 60 years old, not the easiest of lives, and not one grey hair in sight.
Yeah, but did you also notice none of her clothes have eroded or grown away? Put on or lost an ounce.
She wasn't eating.
How does that work?
Yeah, because we had the first gap was 12 weeks, and she hadn't had
one week and she hadn't eaten.
Yeah, hadn't eaten.
But so. Even doesn't make any still.
Sense.
No,
think about it.
Well, nor does a blue block, a blue box that's bigger on the inside, but yeah.
If you examine it closely, none of them really makes sense.
Yeah. If you're in a faster time stream, you still need to eat.
Yes.
But we're getting off the point.
But anyway, it's not important, no.
Yeah. These are not things you're supposed to think
about. No. What you're supposed to pick up on is the fact that it's easily the best performance by Karen Gillan since she was cast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just the subtle little differences between young Amy and old Amy, apart from old Amy's rampaging hatred of the Doctor, which was a bit more subtle. The walk, the voice, the way she carried herself were all different. And I just thought it was absolutely brilliant performance.
Watching the Confidential, she went to see a voice coach to teach her how to bring the voice down and that kind of stuff. And there was characteristics that she tried to maintain that were Amy's, but change a bit. Yeah.
Just a bit for older Amy.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fine performance from Arthur Dervin as well. Oh, that, very nice. The end with the door between them.
That was when I lost it. Yeah. When they started playing Amy's theme slow, I was like, oh, God, this isn't going to end well. Oh, no, I'm not going to like this. And when we had the scene either side of the TARDIS door, everything went a bit blurry. And then when she asked to see Earth, that was just it, you know. I don't think I actually saw the end the first time round because I physically couldn't see. At least I didn't go and buy a toaster, though.
I loved some of the sets. I loved the garden.
Yeah, very it's beautiful, wasn't
it? Oh, it was absolutely gorgeous.
And didn't you just love Robot Rory? That did answer one question, though.
Watch it.
Well, yeah, 36 years old. Can you know she did? We had that scene where she flirted with Rory. Yeah. 36 years old, you haven't had your bloke around. Once you cut off the hands of Rory Robot,
watch it.
Okay.
She might have been a little bit frustrated after 36 years. But...
I'm sure there were other means and ways to.
No, exactly. You've got those 10 fingers. Nice.
Stress relief. Stress relief.
And they come with their own anaesthetic.
It's not good. That numbs it, isn't it?
After a while, sometimes you need it.
Anyway, back to the point, boys and girls.
Rory Robot was so cute.
He was, wasn't he?
Drawn on face.
But yeah.
I noticed Rory Robot, she reprogrammed him. He almost seemed to be empathic to her, but the fact that picking up the glasses
and had to hand him over.
So he actually kind of like made assessments, whereas the other seemed to be very much functional, you know, following the control.
I also liked Arthur Darvill in this, the fact that you, again, see the little slither of still when he loses his rag with the Doctor.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and hurls the glasses on the floor.
Once just to check the history books.
Yeah.
I think this is... There's been a number of stories. You get the feeling that Rory is along because he's followed Amy.
Yes.
The TARDIS turned up and he got caught in something that was going on and the Doctor said, come on the adventure with me. He wouldn't have bothered. He wouldn't. Yeah. He's, it's not what he's into. He's
not because
there because
she was gone.
Amy is. And I've been watching the character changing, and this one, you really start to feel, and there was comments in the God Complex, he's almost growing to hate the Doctor.
Mm, yeah.
Yes. Almost the more that Amy worships the Doctor, the more that Rory's starting to hate the Doctor.
Because he knows she's not safe. Mm. Yeah, and while she's with him, she never will be.
Yeah. Mm. Good use of the Cardiff Millennium Centre.
Again.
We've seen it outside a lot of times on top of
the reception area.
We've seen the reception area before because it was the reception area of...
The hospital, wasn't it?
The hospital, Needs a little shop.
Yes. But see a bit more of it in use. Yeah. Mm.
One thing a few people did pick up on and say, oh, well, how is that possible? Is Amy's sudden knowledge of how to build a sonic probe and that. But that, I mean, she said there was a line, very good line, saying the interface was her friend, her companion and her teacher.
Yeah.
And after 36 years alone, you or I could probably build a sonic probe if someone told us how to do it.
If someone instructs you and you've got 36 years to learn.
Yeah, and you've got these robots wandering around and it's not like you can't access the materials.
Well,
that's what she
was saying. It told her everything except how to escape. Yeah.
And I would have to point out one thing. I thought the directors and the producers would have learnt from the pirate one about giving her a sword.
Yeah, I mean, what on earth? It's not safe. But the fight scenes, I thought, were wonderful at the end. And people have also complained that they were too slow. But if they'd been played at full speed, bless her little cotton socks, she's not a sword fighter, no matter how much she thinks she is. Yeah. And it would have looked clunky and awkward, but slowing it down made it look smoother.
It made it look smoother, and it fitted the moment, because it went completely with the music, the whole building crescendo.
The other thing is, the robots that she's fighting against aren't very quick, etc.
No.
So even if she had sort of like suddenly developed the talents of
Zorro.
D'Artagnan or someone, it still would have looked a bit clumsy, because there's no fight back. Yeah. There's no duel in there. No. It's literally just hitting the robots and lopping off arms and that kind of stuff.
Heads.
To do it in slow-mo, at least adds a bit
of... it looks more impressive. Did notice in The Confidential she said sorry to the robots because she kept forgetting there were people in them. And wasn't the Doctor a total git? Logically what he had to do, because as soon as old Amy said we could both go, he was shaking his head.
Yeah.
But he had to pretend to go along with it, or he'd never get his Amy back.
Yeah.
But when the look on her face when she was running towards him and he shut the door, I think that was the point. That was the point where I thought, got to go and have something to blow my nose with.
Yes, that was the point at which I was calling the Doctor person of unmarried parenting.
Oh, it was a total bit. And then to leave it up to Rory, I thought that was cruel. Yeah.
That was cop-out.
Again, that is another line which we bank for the future. You're making me like you.
Oh,
It's, you know, AIDS... As you said, Rory is not going into this with his eyes closed or rosy.
Some brilliant lines all the way through this.
Yes.
The guy from the Daily Mirror liked the whole, I can't remember how it went, I take you to a planet 2 billion years in the future and you want to update Twitter.
I like to let people know where I am.
No, overall, I thought it was certainly one of the best ones we've had this season.
Mm. Makeup was good as well.
Yeah?
Mm. Yeah.
It's a shame we didn't get to see what Karen Gillan's mum looks like. Because it'd be interesting to see the aged-up makeup.
Yeah. That's it. When Patrick Stewart had to do his age makeup for Star Trek, he fell asleep as though he was putting him on. And when he woke up, he was looking at his father. I'm just wondering if she experienced...
It's the same kind
of
thing.
Maybe they... I don't think her mother can be that old, but...
Yeah?
No.
Grandmother?
I wonder if her mother's hair is a fixed point in time as well.
She obviously got the robots to make some dye for her.
Yeah.
That's probably what it was.
Yeah, hair dye.
And wasn't that very poignant moment when Rory's back in her little cubby hole and she picks up the lipstick. And then realises, sod it, what's the point, and puts it down again.
That was one of those kind of scenes that I thought was well observed, that wouldn't possibly have made it under some other writers in that, because it was a very female scene.
Yeah.
It's got to be well observed by men, not to put a man down, but it's not the kind of thing they'd instantly think a woman would pick up makeup and think about putting makeup on even that many years down the road. But the fact that she then decided not to was like, I have broken with that person.
Yeah.
But I thought that was quite... There's some lovely little bits in this.
What would have been a brilliant ending is the robots, they've caught her, they've anaesthetised her, and then she turns out not to be allergic to the injection after all.
Well, wasn't she about to disappear anyway?
Well, yeah, but it would have been an extra kick in the nuts. You know?
But it also depends, because all this timey-wimey stuff and alternative universes, we do know that in one universe they don't take Amy back, so Amy does stay there, etc.
One other thing that sprang to mind was when the Doctor was talking about you, if anyone's going to rewrite history, it would be someone who's as contradictory, etc., etc., etc. Was he also talking about himself with his own timeline?
Could be.
There were some bits in here that I got the feeling were set ups for stuff that's coming. Mm. Not that I could put my finger on, but you know, like when you see a movie and at the very beginning they show someone how to work a piece of equipment.
Well, like when she went back for her phone.
Yeah.
And you knew it was going to appear again later.
At the end of the story, that becomes something that's important.
Yeah.
There were things like Rory saying, you're making me like you, and the comments about resetting time, etc.
Yeah.
I just get the feeling there's little bits here that are setting us up for the end story.
Maybe.
Wouldn't be at all surprised.
Talking of the lines, I do like the fact that you want me to face down the whole of the causal nexus and destiny and reality.
For a boy.
for a boy, for love. That's what love is there. Yeah. Isn't to face down destiny.
Yeah. So all in all, we enjoyed The Girl Who Waited.
We cried.
Yes,
a lot. I watched it three times to try and desensitize myself to it when it actually
even
was
I
out.
Leaked.
You leaked.
I leaked.
That age.
Yes, that
age. That's what tenor ladies
it comes,
for.
Comes on to you as you get older. Yes. Yeah, it's why I was laughing so much at the ending.
So The Girl Who Waited, the episode that made horrible Purcell go and buy a toaster.
That's very depressing.
And then The God Complex.
Yep.
One for Adam here, or rather El Presidente.
Yes.
How much of this did you see in yourself, El Presidente?
Yeah, so you were lolloping great Minotaur beast.
Oh, I did love the fact the that Nine the Minotaur Mon. Is related to the Nine Mon.
Yeah. This, when we was watching the trailers, we thought it might
be... Is that going to be the Nine Mon?
It might be a Nine Mon.
Oh, okay.
Would they take a naff 70s creature?
And make it brilliant.
It
still looked a bit naff.
Yeah.
At least they didn't have anyone going, dear Monitor.
First thing I loved about this one was the setting, the whole Shining ripoff.
Yeah.
Yes.
The hotel. Yeah. And I love the idea of there being a door for everyone. Mm. And before the end of this review, I want you all to think about what would have been behind your door, the thing you fear the most.
No, I'm not going there. It doesn't actually take me that long to think of it. No, I'm not going there.
One thing Real Keith did point out was, although the doctor said because Rory had no faith in anything or superstitions, which I think was really hard on Rory.
I think he would have had faith in Amy, if nothing else. I think he's got faith in Amy. He's willing to follow her aboard the ship to have all these adventures. He's willing to chase after her, even when he thinks she's infatuated with the doctor, dropped out of the sky with your stupid face.
I don't think he has faith in her. I think he has hope in her.
I think he has faith in his talent as a nurse.
But didn't Real Keith come up with the theory that we've seen Rory's room.
The one with the clown.
The one with the clowning. Because I'm sure the clown is Matt Smith.
It did look a bit like him, but I'm not sure. But what would be the point of putting Matt Smith in all that makeup just for that one shot?
Well, I think this may be something that's coming up later, but...
Well, after the end of this episode, is there anything coming up later for these two?
That's it. That's the whole point. We have seen how the Doctor plays fast and loose. This is how I travel. And how much Rory hates that.
Mm.
So I think the room with the clowning was actually Rory's room.
Yeah, the doctor clowning around with everyone's life, thinking it's funny.
Yeah.
Rory was shown the image of
the exit briefly, but it didn't stay there. It didn't disappear.
When he turned back, it had gone.
Yeah.
Because it wanted him out.
I think it may have taken longer for Rory to get ready to cook.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that the clown room was Rory's room.
Favourite character of the whole episode was the nurse.
Oh, God,
she was brilliant, and she also produced my favourite line.
Rita.
Which was, you're Muslim. Yes, but don't be afraid.
she was
wonderful.
Set up to be a companion, even asking for a phone number at one point.
Yeah.
What was it Rory says... Every time the doctor gets pally with someone, I get the urge to call their next of kin.
Yes, I love that. Yeah.
Which obviously comes true again this time. Yeah.
I thought, is it David?
David Walliams.
He was very wonderful. Very good.
Love the idea of a race of abject cowards.
Yes, but they're not cowards, are they?
No, they're
very nasty cowards.
It's a very intelligent.
Yeah.
You know,
how do I stay alive? Yeah, process. You know, just. Doesn't matter who I throw under the lorry.
It's how you stay alive at the expense of anyone else.
Yeah.
Although the line about being a town planner and planting all the trees so the invading armies can march in the shade was wonderful.
Yes, I did have an element of sympathy for that and could just imagine the report coming through a desk somewhere. This one to me was almost an adult version of the one we saw a couple of weeks ago with the monsters in the cupboard for the little boy.
Yeah.
Mm.
This is almost the monsters in the cupboard for the grown-ups.
Well, again, this one had a very strong Sapphire and Steel vibe running through it.
Lots of corridors to run up
and
down.
Lots of corridors. Yes.
The same one in different directions.
I can't remember. There was a particular film process. I can't remember the name of the process, but you got a lot of it in this where you seem to focus in on something, but the background
pulls
away
from it. A lot of that sort of showing the corridors extending off into infinity.
He did it, I think, for vertigo and that kind of thing. Yeah.
It popped up in Jaws a couple of times. The motion has a particular name that I
can't... Yeah, you pull the camera back, zoom in.
Yeah.
Good to see little Amy again.
Yes. Yeah,
what did they do? Did they kick that girl? Because she does big teary eyes very well now.
I did like the way that was shot. The doctor was talking to grown-up Amy, but then in some shots he was talking to
little Amy. Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure or convinced the way the doctor destroyed Amy's faith in him.
No.
Like we said
before, it seemed a bit easy.
Yeah.
The seventh doctor
Fenric
doing the same thing to Ace in Fenric was much better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Much more vicious.
And nasty.
And, you know, it works.
And this was almost the reverse of Fenric, because in Fenric you had to have a faith.
Yeah.
You had to radiate the faith to keep away Fenris, whereas this one you had to destroy your faith.
To get rid of the monster.
To get rid of the monster. Yeah. So it was almost the reverse of Fenris.
And I think talking to her, he was talking to her too gently and it was, you know, in
should've
my mind, it should have been. He should have just alienated her completely.
So
chucked her through the window and
or what was in the doctor's room?
Well, I think given the abruptness of his decision to
and
dump
the fact
them
he said,
both,
I thought it would be you.
Yeah,
so it was definitely a person.
We had the cloister bell. I don't know. I think in his room it was the TARDIS and his companion dying. I mean, it's probably the worst thing he can imagine.
Yeah, no, I think it's him.
You think it's him?
Yeah, I think it's him. I think it's
ego.
the god complex.
His darker side. Yeah. The dream lord, the Valiard, the bit of himself he doesn't like.
Well, in that case, what was the reason for him dumping Amy and Rory so
well,
quickly?
Well, I thought maybe it was the master, the one other person who knew him as he is, who he's never been able to defeat, nor has he been able to save.
But he's defeated him tons of times.
No, every not time truly defeat, as in destroy or what have you.
Yeah, I think the master would be too easy.
Mm.
I think, you know, it's his deepest rooted sphere.
I'm going on along with fake faith. I'll get it out in a minute.
Everything he loved dying.
It was certainly the cloister bell is the sound to man the battle stations.
Oh, yes.
So it was something in the TARDIS, something that was going wrong. Now, whether there were more companions in there as well, and again, it gives you a good enough excuse for
getting rid of them.
Amy and Rory out.
I did like Rita's discussion on the stairs and, you know, the fact he has the god complex.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought that was quite an interesting little speech.
One other thing that I'd have loved to have seen more of, the pictures on the walls.
Oh, yes.
I'd have loved to have seen what every one of them was afraid of, because there was a picture of a Jadoon.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So I suppose injustice in some way.
You had, I was trying to point them out, we had Santarin.
Defeat.
Dying without honour.
Yeah, defeat. Yeah. Quite a few humans. There was a Jadoon. I saw a Tritivore. Across the way. Couldn't see what it was because it was all blurred. But
maybe an HD version. My better read.
Yeah, they were all dressed in shirt and ties, but it wasn't all humans. It was
very much like The Shining. The picture at the end of The Shining, where they're all dressed up in their dinner suits.
Oh, really?
One thing I did find interesting, and I'm wondering if there was something in it. This was originally a prism
that
the holodeck
had kind of like gone Fruit Loops and was now taking people who held faith in some kind, not necessarily religious faith, but held faith
in
something.
Who had a strong faith.
But a lot of people have strong faith. Why choose these people? She's not an imam. An imam would hold presumably more faith than just a worshipper.
I don't know.
He hasn't written books necessarily on conspiracy theories, but as a conspiracist. Have they all, including Amy, done something in their life that would justify them being on a prison ship in a warped sense of mind?
Well, that's the thing. If they've... An imam has got to the height of his religion, but he may have done that all through book learning, etc.
Yeah.
He may have never had to have defend his faith, as a woman, especially standing up to her father...
But she wouldn't be the only woman that holds faith. Well, what chose these people out from all the others?
You're trying to say it's like the Red Dwarf episode, Justica, with...
Justice,
with Rimmer thinking he should be sentenced.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's something behind the reason why, of all the thousands of people who believe in conspiracy theories or what have you, these are the ones
They weren't the only ones. We saw there were tons of pictures on the wall. It just happened to be...
But there wasn't thousands of pictures.
Well, we only saw that one staircase. Mm. it just happened to be that it was these people at that time. Once they were all on the wall, it would have been the next lot.
Yeah, they seem to be taken in groups, and they're three or four each time.
And what do we think of their rooms? I felt so sorry for the little stuttering geek at the beginning. His room full of bitches.
Yes, the certain type of girl.
I also like the line from Rory. I think it was Rory, or might have been the Doctor, about how big a battle he'd had just overcoming his stutter. It was nice to see them throw something like that in, because that will relate to an awful lot of children watching the show.
And the fact of remembering that little victories are sometimes worth more than saving the entire universe. Yeah. Mm.
And what's her name? Rita and her father.
Oh, father.
Yeah.
The Weepy Angels, of course. There for the little, what's his name, Gibbous.
David Williams.
So they obviously invaded his planet.
Yeah.
Must have done.
Sounds like everybody has.
I suppose if you capitulate.
Okay.
Everyone just turns their eyes to the ground and they feast and then go home.
maybe.
Get what they want and go.
But of course the big news of this episode is the apparent leaving of Amy and Rory.
Yeah.
One wonders... I know he's four-dimensional, so he could drop them off there and then go and buy the house.
Yeah.
And the car. Don't forget the car. What was the line? It's my favourite car. How did you know it's my favourite car? You showed me a picture of one once and said, that's my favourite car.
Yeah, I like the bit with him. She's going to try and persuade you that we will be guilty and be holding you forever. I think I can learn to live with that. But obviously the house that they're living in when they get the letter to invite them to America.
Yeah.
At the beginning. I'm fairly sure it looks very, very similar style house, etc.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
It's a very similar kind of style.
Doesn't work out, does it?
No,
it's already happened for them.
Yeah.
They know about the death on the beach. That's all happened.
So they've got two houses now.
Yes.
Perhaps they rent one.
They've got her house.
Yeah.
It may have happened to them in their own timeline, but at some point they still have to move into the house where they pick it up.
It's 9 o'clock on a Monday flipping evening. We are not going to go into separate timelines.
Something can happen to you when you're 50, but you go back to 30 and move into the place where you live when the thing that happens to you at 50.
Right.
So I think we do.
Anyway,
see
it's
them
a nice
again.
House.
Or we have seen them again.
We might. We're assuming the final episode we'll be back on
that
beach.
Well, haven't they both signed up for a new season as well?
No.
Well, episodes.
They said they'd be back. Whether we believe that or not is another matter. But I think if they are back, they'll be back for one episode or two episodes. In the same way Martha was in season four.
Yeah. And Rose keeps popping up every now and then.
Yeah. So I think that's probably it for them. We might see them in the final episode, maybe in their past. We might see their past actions from another point of view.
Explained, because it's the most ridiculously abrupt dismissal of a companion since Sarah Jane left.
I was going to say, it reminded me slightly of Sarah Jane somewhat. Yeah.
It's not the first, though. Not the first time they've been dropped off back home.
No.
Because they were back home
at the beginning of the series.
Before Lost Astronaut. Yeah. So obviously they were dropped off home after their honeymoon.
I predict that we find out what was in the Doctor's room, perhaps in the next episode when he talks to, is it Craig? When he meets Craig in the lodger follow-up.
The lodger guy.
Perhaps he'll tell him what he saw in his room and why he had to drop them off. But otherwise it's just too abrupt.
Yeah, just save their lives.
But then as he says, you know, at the end of the day, what do you want me to do? He's got to at some point go, here's the door, thank you very much, and, you know, stand and wave across
the street for an hour. But her accepting it that easily...
Well, the point of the episode was to get her to the point where she would, by breaking her faith in him.
I think it would have been more believable if him breaking her faith had been more harshly aggressive.
I mean, Rory's happy to be out of
there. Oh, yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And have a car.
His mini.
Yeah, a kind of car you don't expect a happily married man to have. But no, I genuinely enjoyed this story.
And this half of the season so far, I think the quality of the storytelling has gone up.
It's been wonderful.
We've had a couple of corkers in a row.
Although the budget's gone down, it seems. I think all the expensive episodes have already happened.
Yeah.
I mean, these two we've reviewed tonight are quite cheap episodes. Very small sets.
I have to say, I think this is where sometimes the BBC and fans... mistake isn't the right word, but forget what made Who great in the first place. okay, the sets didn't exactly wobble when we used to watch it, but you knew it wasn't that great in terms of the sets, etc. And it was always the story telling. Yeah. There were times when you had no change of set whatsoever and you were raptured for 25 minutes. And I think it's the quality of the stories as much as all the glitz and glamour that goes with it. You can have a beautiful set with amazing special effects and the rest of it, and if it's not a good story, people aren't going to watch it.
And I think The Girl Who Waited was the first time since The Edge of Destruction that it had only been the TARDIS crew.
Mm. Well, it appears that real Keith and fake Keith have gone and got intellectual and posh. Ooh. And they went to go to the Globe, Shakespeare's Theatre.
One did, didn't one?
One did,
yes. And they went and saw something called Dr. Faustus.
We just like plays with Doctor in the title.
Yes. Yeah.
More than just Doctors in the title. Oh, do
tell. Tell me about it. Yeah.
We saw a Rory.
Hey, Rory.
Just the one.
Bearded Rory.
I really don't know when the play finishes its run, but if it's still on when this podcast is aired, I do recommend you go and see Dr. Faustus by Christopher Marlowe at the Globe, starring Arthur Darvill as Mephistopheles, a little devil. He was wonderful.
Human high.
Did he have a little fork?
No, he didn't, but he was all dressed in red and had a cloak and a beard. And a hat.
Yeah.
There was no Rory there at all. It was proof that Arthur Darvill is a damn fine actor. even when he wasn't front of stage, he was always on stage and was always acting. He was sexy. he had a beard and a nose and a hat. if you've never been to the Globe Theatre, seriously, try and go and see something there. It's atmospheric,
yes,
is not the word.
Oh,
there was one dodgy moment where it looked as if the castle in the sky was going to deflate and come back down. it was a tiny balloon shaped as a castle.
Oh, really?
And it did its own thing and sort of floated down towards the stage. there was another scary moment where pigeons came along and ate the bread that was tempting the devil. So, but you know, you take what you can.
Pigeons,
yes,
they obviously were.
Did Dad live at all for that?
No, there was a bit of laughter. And at the end, when everything was over and done with, there was a musical number, which I have a feeling young Mr. Darvill may have had a hand in writing.
Yes, but it's difficult to
rock and roll
with a lute. He was using a lute like an axe.
But he gave it his best shot.
Oh, God, yeah.
So that's Dr. Faustus at the Globe, London. Go and see it.
Yeah.
And we've been watching more TV.
Oh, more TV.
What have we been watching this time?
We've been watching...
Come on.
Torturewood.
The Miracle Day. And I think it should be titled The Miracle Is It's Over. Well, okay. the last two episodes, The Gathering and The Bloodline.
Yeah.
From the beginning, I've said I loved this.
She has.
All the way through. I didn't think it was too slow, even though everyone else did.
Yeah,
yeah.
All the way up to episode 9, I thought, this is brilliant. And then episode 10, you know, why don't you just pour cold water over the whole damn thing? Jack is immortal because he's a fixed point in time, not because he's got funny blood. And how did the hole in the ground make everyone stop dying? I mean, how? It wasn't explained. And why kill Whiny McCries a lot just as she's becoming decent? And why make Rex immortal? It's nothing to do with the blood. You've spoiled it all.
They're going, it's nothing to do with the blood. There's nothing special about Jack's blood. Jack's blood isn't special. It's Jack itself. Suddenly it's his blood. He makes people immortal. Mm-hmm. And it's a hole in the ground.
How does the hole... I mean...
Morphic fields, as Jack said at the beginning.
Yeah, I think the reason, not that I'm trying to justify.
Yes, you are.
But I think the reason Rex become immortal is because he had Jack's blood in it. Hang on.
At the moment.
Hang on. And, or should I say, the blood come out of him. So they were comparable morphic fields that flipped them both back.
So the hole in the ground that has no intelligence decided to make him immortal.
This is the stumbling block. The hole in the ground why isn't... I think it was actually mentioned, why isn't the lava on the centre of the Earth?
Why isn't the volcano?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but...
There's
yeah.
literally no one involved with Torchwood that I don't hate at this moment.
No, Torchwood!
Did the man who fell in the hole come out the other side?
Oh, that's the question, yeah. Or is he sort of in the middle going, boing, boing.
He should be in the middle, yeah, should be in the middle. Yeah.
Spinning gently in the going, middle. Phew, it's hot.
Better he'd be dead. But
I think he might be, yeah.
The thing is, he fell down, but the hole was directly in front of them.
Yes.
Shh. It's a gap which goes all the way down. I don't know.
It was just such a disappointment. Yeah, I was all ready to defend this, going, see, it was brilliant. Because up until episode 9, I think it was. Well written, well acted, well everything. And then it's as if they thought they'd got another 4 episodes, realised they hadn't, and panicked. And made some crap up.
Someone I know who hadn't stuck with it said to me, so what is it at the end? Aliens, etc. I said, it's a hole in the ground. He said, no, come on, what is it? It's a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
As ways to end the story, yeah. Having your villain being, it's a hole in the ground.
I'll tell you what, though, the only redeeming factor was the way Oswald Daines finished.
Oh, yes.
Because I was really worried that he was going to have this big change of heart. I'm a decent guy. Let me sacrifice myself. No. But no, the only reason he wanted to go to hell was because that's where the bad girls go and they can't run faster than him. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly
he
right.
He stayed true to his character.
He really did. And that was the only redeeming factor.
Yeah. In that last episode, there were some nice bits. One was that with Oswald Daines. And I did like the bit where Gwen looked in and that woman who's sitting there all sort of like absolutely delighted where everyone sees everything says, and what do you see? She said, yeah, I see failure, I see disappointment, I see pain and suffering. I'm a mother. I'll get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was sitting there thinking, just that aspect of it. It shows you who you are, but if you're comfortable with who you are,
then
you might not
no
necessarily
threat.
Like what you do or what happens around you, but if you're comfortable with accepting that's who you are and that's what your life is, then it ain't going to send you Fruit Loops.
No.
It's a bit of a rip-off of the old Total Perspective Vortex, isn't it?
Yes.
And Back to Justice World on Red Dwarf. Yeah.
It's a rip-off.
Combination of those two, really.
I think you could probably go through the SFX back catalogue and find
pick
a
out
good
bits.
Probably 40 or 50 references to similar ideas. Mm.
Such a disappointment.
I don't know.
I feel violated. Not in a good way.
Oh. The whole thing was really too long.
It was definitely too stretched out.
I don't think the setup can support a 10 episode.
No. But ironically, there's a lot of stuff they didn't explain, which if they had explained it, could have padded it out nicely.
Yeah.
They've left so much wide open. The families, this was a plan A. There's a plan B. It's just a bit of a warm-up, really, for them. You don't confront the families at all. Why?
I think that is hope, so they could hoping to hook a second series on it.
No!
But why not just do what they did in Children of Earth? Give it a clean end.
Yeah.
And then you start afresh next time. Don't have all that baggage.
That's
you have
the
to
trouble.
Explain
you're
to people last time on Torchwood.
You're threatening now to go down the X-Files Lost route.
Yeah.
Story should have finished. Boom.
Should have done.
That's the thing. And Red Lips Mook Bitchy Face, who deserved to die and given her failure, should have died, walks away scot-free with a new job. And Whiny McCries a Lot, who, as I said, was becoming a really interesting character, gets shot for no reason.
And do they make Rex immortal so that when they do decide to do another series, if Barrowman can't do it, they have their own Captain Jack?
But I honestly don't see the actor doing it.
I
because
can't.
He's too he's big.
This is America. The actor does not necessarily have to be the same actor, but the character will be retained. You know, they do sometimes. People have suddenly reappeared in showers.
This is very true.
Regenerating Sue Ellen.
I didn't like it. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
You've got another 4 minutes.
I don't care. It pissed me off.
I have to say, I thought the strongest character throughout was Gwen.
I started to
get fed up with not Jack himself, but the way they were portraying Jack's character. Okay, he was suddenly immortal, but it's almost like he turned into Samson. By losing his immortality,
he lost
became
his mojo as
quite
well.
Quite a weak person, but he wasn't that weak before he had immortality. They kind of, like, I won't say miswrote Jack, but You weren't sympathetic to him anymore.
Well, look at Jack when we first saw him. He was an arrogant, cocky SOB.
Yeah.
There's nothing weak about him. And he wasn't,
he's been used to being immortal
then.
For thousands of years.
Yeah.
So.
But I don't know. I don't think we'll probably see any more Torchwood after this.
I doubt it. I don't know. You never know, but I'm not sure I want to after this. No. If they do come back to Torchwood, I want them to do a clean slate.
Yeah.
Bring back just Jack, Gwen, Reese. Maybe the baby,
PCN,
Sergeant Andy, but not the CIA people, not Rex or any of that lot.
Although poor old Q,
he
was
blown.
A decent bloke.
He got blown to smithereens.
Yeah, up, yeah. Catch me one, and then
presumably
died.
With the translator.
Yeah.
So on the whole, we'll say that it certainly wasn't a scratch on the last Torchwood series.
No. Not
despite
a patch.
The
it wasn't
hype.
Until episode 10.
Yeah. And, it won't be joining my DVD collection.
No.
Like
quite
don't do it again.
It was a bit up and down. I was very down on it in the first couple of episodes. Episodes 3 and 4 I thought were quite good. Then it went a bit roller coastery. Occasionally it got quite good, then it slowed right down again, got quite good again, slowed right down again.
I think something you said too, you had about 50 minutes for 10-minute plot time.
Now, I have to say, as the endings of a long series that build up go, this has to probably be the most disappointing I have come across.
Yeah, let's not talk about it anymore.
It is expunged from the records.
Good. Right, after the thorough depression that was the end of Torchwood, don't ever do it again, we should cheer ourselves up by saying hello to the head of Pertwee.
Oh!
Hello, head of Pertwee! Hello, cardboard Grimhilda. Why is she facing the wall?
Oh, she is, isn't she?
What have you done?
No, she likes to change position occasionally.
Hello, various other Amys.
Dangerous Churchill.
Graham! Why is Amy standing on Graham's head?
Well, at least one of them is holding his hand.
Well, that's a little Amy.
Little Amelia.
Oh, and...
This is a really perverted house, and for anyone of you that doesn't think these things are real, they
come and
are.
Visit.
Yep.
You've been writing to us, you lovely, lovely people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've heard from Mr. M.
Hello, Mr. M.
He says, hello, team. Torchwood, really? Miracle Day. I haven't said anything about this for a while, so I won't remember much. That's all right.
Wasn't much to remember.
Episode 4. I only remember the bit with Rex running up the stairs. Was it any good? Episode 5. A brilliant ending. What else happened? Episode 6. My favourite episode. It was just brilliant. The whole bit with Esther being attacked by the camp commander guy was brilliant.
Camp commander.
And Reese going through the gates was good. 9 out of 10.
Oh.
Episode 7, and from my favourite to my least favourite, started off well, started to go off course, and the less said about the end, the better. But the only memorable moment is the bird. I was on the verge of tears, 4 out of 10. Episode 8, and we're back. The pace is picked up. Yes, it's still slow, but it's like the speed of light for Miracle Day standards. Oswald Daines is a brilliant character. He should always be in it. Brilliant. 8.5 out of 10.
He's dead.
Now, lots of people have been complaining about the drawn-outedness of Miracle Day, but I love the pace. Well said. It's brilliant to have a show this long. Imagine if Who was being told this slowly.
Oh, God.
I think it would be better. Impossible Astronaut Day of the Moon would be about 8 episodes long.
You would.
So it's time for Doctor Who. Let's kill Hitler.
Why not?
Second favourite Who episode ever.
Oh.
Behind the impossible astronaut.
Really?
I guessed who Mel's was as soon as I heard Amy say her name. Well, I only just heard, too busy looking at those legs. Does Amy have a multicoloured tights collection?
You
9 out of 10. Purcell is a bastard. It's Doctor Who Night Terrors. Ah, that was good, wasn't it, for you as well? Oh, I was scared at some points. It's one of the best this year, along with Eps 1, 2, 7 and 8. And the nursery rhyme about the Doctor's death at the end was brilliant, 8.5 out of 10. And now, a 30-second recommendation.
Go!
Spider-Man, back in black. Previously in Peter Parker's life, he died, then he was reborn, then he got a new Spider-Man suit, then he revealed his identity to the world, and now his Aunt Amy has been shot. Following the passing of the SHRA, Superhuman Registration Act, Peter Parker is on the run, and with his aunt on the verge of death, he seeks revenge on the Dehooter the Kingpin. I don't know what that means. He dons his old black-suited costume and goes into Moody Spider-Man. It's my favourite run of graphic novels ever. The series includes Peter meeting a form of God, who doesn't really help much. But it's nice to see God's doing all right. But yes, an absolutely brilliant series, but a bit of a reset button style ending. The full list of books, Spider-Man, The Other, The Road to Civil War, Civil War, The Amazing Spider-Man, Civil War, Spider-Man, Back in Black, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, Back in Black, One More Day.
57 seconds, even with some fluffing.
So, this week I've learned that Purcell is a bastard. Yep, River's going to wear lots of jumpers. And the less said about the end, the better. Mr. M, P.S. I feel so mature.
The Back in Black, the one that it was going on about, is the one that was written by JMS.
Oh, okay.
It's part of the John Michael Straczynski.
John Michael Straczynski, yeah, yeah.
I have a short letter from Owain.
Hello, Owain!
Hi, Hedda Pertwee and some other people. I have been listening to your back volumes.
Oh, God.
I hope you took some medication while you were doing that. I am now on to issue 45. And my brain is mush.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The podcast has always been of an excellent quality, and I thought I'd let you know. So, let's kill Hitler. I thought it was great. Some more River mythology, which is great thing, and some brilliant Rory moments.
Yep.
Sent from my iPod, Owain.
Ooh. We like Rory.
We've got one here from Patrick.
Hello, Patrick.
Dear team, this email falls into three categories of life.
Oh.
Torchwood, Talons, and Tom. All the T's. Part one. Torchwood. I've been away for a few weeks, as you may have noticed. Went on holiday to Tanzania. He's got a thing about T's.
Yeah, he's on holidays in T's.
Went on holiday in Tanzania, which was lovely. The downside of this was that I missed most of Torchwood. I've been catching up as best I can, and I'm watching episode 5 right now, and I'm really enjoying it. The first one or two felt like they stumbled a little, but it's fallen into place beautifully. Jack and Gwen are amazing as ever. I'm liking most of the new characters. Rex is the only one I'm not enjoying as much, but I can deal with him. Jilly Kritzinger is wonderful and slightly demented. And Oswald Daines is my favourite character of Russell T for a very long time, except for maybe Unwin. Part 2, Talons of Winning Chiang. I watched my first full episode of classic Doctor Who the other day, and I absolutely loved it.
Good one to choose.
Good one to
very
choose.
Very good one to choose.
It took
watch
me
the Pyramids of Mars next.
Mm.
It took me a while to get used to a different style and an impressive giant rat.
Oh, yes!
But once I got past those, it was really is just like any other Doctor Who story. Tom Baker is everything I had expected him to be. Leela is really an excellent idea for a companion, executed perfectly by Louise Jameson.
Yep.
The scene with Leela's eating habits and Lightfoot is just wonderful. Mm. Speaking of which, I can see exactly why they gave Jengo and Lightfoot a spin-off. They are some wonderful characters.
Yeah.
Mm. Part 3. Tom Spoilsbury.
Ah.
That is, not Baker. I've had a little bit of DWN gossip for you.
Oh, yeah.
I write this on the 1st of September, and last night I saw a rather exciting tweet from DWM editor in question.
Yep.
The tweet has since been deleted for reasons you will understand when you see it, but I have reproduced it for you here.
I heard about this.
If Benjamin Cook has no problems with being massively underprofessional, then neither do I. Ben, if you think you're covering the next series, you've got another think coming.
Who's Benjamin Cook?
Ben Cook, he's one of the big DWM guys. He did the Russell T. Davies
book. The writer's tale.
Oh, right. Mm. Ooh.
And he does quite a few other bits and pieces.
Trouble in Paradise.
Oh, boy.
If the position is open, you know, we're here.
Oh boy, Benjamin Cook is of course one of DWM's biggest journalists, but appears he's done something to annoy those at the top. Dissent in the ranks, I feel.
Mm. Yes.
Yours enigmatically, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Patrick.
We have another one. Dear team, just finished episode 5. Oh my God, that was an incredible series! This is amazing! Yours, Ingley. Patrick.
All right, Patrick, put the catnip down.
Yes.
That's the bit where there's burned her, I assume, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dissension in the ranks, apparently, at the production office with people leaving, and now with the magazine.
Yeah, the magazine.
I'm just wondering, is this the tweet because of the tweet that he did about Rose, Donna, and Martha?
No, nothing to do with that. No. There's something about Ben Cook not being able to deliver stuff on time.
Oh.
Big hoo ha.
Really unprofessional to air that over
on Twitter,
though.
Yeah.
Crying out loud.
Unbelievable.
I think sometimes, I don't know, obviously, I don't tweet at the moment, but I think sometimes people forget that they're not just talking to their mates.
Yeah, this is what internal email is for.
Internal world.
This is again the problem I've said with Facebook is too many people use Facebook out there as a diary and put their innermost thoughts on it, not realizing it's not just you and the computer, it's you and the rest of the world.
Sorry, anyone who doesn't realise by now has to be a little bit thick.
I don't think it's they realise. I think it's just become so commonplace. That still makes them a little bit thick. But again, it is very unprofessional, I think, to air this kind of thing in public.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, the Who fans are going to be watching these tweets like mad, and it doesn't matter what you take back. Someone will have copied it, written it down.
Yeah.
Forward, whatever it is you do with them, forward them on, which means can't be deleted, retweeted. You can't take it back.
I didn't realise you could delete Twitters.
You can delete tweets.
Sorry, I can't be doing with Twitter. Bloody stupid. 140 characters. I mean, for
precise insults going around. But anyway, have one here from Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Chris. Hello again to the Staggering Stories and the house-calling head of Smith. Once again, real life has prevented me from sending to you on time, I think.
Oh, no.
Night terrors.
Yay.
So what would you get if you put all the scariest things in one big cupboard of a story? Surely you'd get this. Comfortably the best thing Mark Gatiss has written for the show. He even manages to make old Mrs. Rossiter breathing outside the window creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great performance from Jamie Oram as George.
Yes.
A child permanently frightened of everything.
Excellent.
Yeah. I thought they struck gold with him.
Yeah. I don't know.
Sounded like a little old lady. Come to take me away.
So frightened, in fact, that the doctor's making a house call. Very funny scene, the three regulars trying to get next to three apartments. Flat scene, you find. And utterly failing. Interesting that the doctor didn't let on to Amy Reid found George. Another example of this doctor's slightly secretive nature. Incredibly scary moments number one. Amy and Rory in the lift. Incredibly scary moment number two. Mrs. Roster being eaten by bin bags. And we have Daniel Mays this week as Alex. I don't need to say much about him. We've all seen Ashes to Ashes and know how good he is.
Yep.
A great performance as the worrying and caring father. Really good pantophobia gag from the Doctor too. That moment when George sees the Doctor for the first time, framed in the light. You get the sense this is the bestest best friend anyone could wish to meet and everything's going to be okay. Like the props Amy and Rory got to use, especially Amy's giant lantern and, whoa, glass eye in the drawer. Creepy. Creepier still was the noise Amy's nail scratching the glass. Excellent point made about stopping children watching scary things on TV. And nice reference to the seven keys to doomsday from the Doctor.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, when he was talking about fairy tales, he was told.
Oh, yeah. And then we have the character called Purcell in this.
Ooh. Horrible Purcell.
I don't think there's much left to say about him. I'm sure he covered all the jokes already.
There's always room for more.
Great bit of sonicking from the Doctor to animate the toys and doing it with a childlike enthusiasm. It was during the scene in the kitchen that it suddenly dawned on me. This story is basically the flip side to The Lodger. The Doctor, another guy in a flat with some creakingly funny dialogue, except one is mostly humorous, the other mostly frightening. I don't say that's a negative against it at all. Great Matt Smith speech number one. The speech the Doctor gives to Alex ending with, you see these eyes? They're old eyes.
Yeah.
And the one thing I can tell you, Alex, monsters are real. You're not from social services, then. Now we've come to those freaky-looking wooden dolls with their oversized weird heads. The reveal of George not being human was a shock. Again, great from Daniel Mays being unable to take it in. Incredibly scary moment number three. The Doctor and Alex being sucked into the cupboard.
That was well done.
Especially as Hitler was in there.
And Tom Cruise. This and other parts expertly directed by Richard Clarke. His direction on this being even better than the Doctor's wife. Maybe want him back next year. Let's hope he doesn't miss out like Adam Smith has this year. Incredibly scary moment number four. Purcell becomes a doll.
Says so much.
How can it be bigger in here? More common than you think. The Great Matt Smith speech, number two. The Dr. Alex and Doll's house dining room. Termites, giant termites, trying to get on the property ladder. Again, Doll's house and cuckoo in the nest, really nice ideas to play around with. Thankfully, the doctor managed to convince Alex about George. Such a complex, intricate story, solved by a father accepting his son. All better, and there's a way open for a sequel. I like that the doctor is promising to come back a lot this series, and I wonder if there's something in that. A nice little sinister reminder at the end from the nursery rhyme running through this as well. Speak to you all next time. Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. We've heard from Andre.
Hello, Andre.
He says, greetings from America, home of Torchwood. It's been far too long since I annoyed you transatlantically. Oh, where are my manners? Hello, Staggering Stories team, and all items plastic, rubber, metal or paper that in some part, large, small or indifferent, that make this podcast oh so very special. First off, I was ecstatic that I lost neither power nor my cable and internet provider due to Irene. That was the windy thing. Yeah,
is that the windy thing that's out here at the moment?
That's the one that hit us this morning, yeah. Yes.
No, that was Katia. That was a completely different one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Once again, a girl, in this case Irene, who everyone says is big and bad and finds out she is not much of anything when she gets to New York City. In fact, the only thing I used the batteries that I bought to power flashlights, etc. for was in my remote control for my television.
Of course it was that.
I was able to use said remote to watch Let's Kill Hitler. I loved this episode. Much has been said about this episode in places, including this podcast, so far be it for me to add on to the pile of accolades. Now, if whoever is reading this email, please move away or take it from El Presidente. I would greatly appreciate it. That's right, it's me. As to night terrors, am I the only person who thought the changing of Amy into a wooden doll appropriate? I am basing this comment on what I perceive to be her acting ability.
Oh. May change his mind when he sees a girl who waited.
Don't get me wrong, she's lovely to look at. But up to this point, her acting range appears to be, look how wide I open my eyes. Size varies due to danger and or fear. Now, that may be because I really don't like her as a companion. It is merely a personal preference to quote Craig Ferguson. I look forward to your letters. That said, moving on. Karen Gillan finally showed some acting ability in The Girl Who Waited. That was well written and completely blown out of the park in a tour de force by Miss Gillan. To be honest, I thought she looked much sexier older, but that could reflect my personal taste, but I digress. Although the joy for Rory makes my mind boggle and go to a happy place. The fact that she changed her mannerisms, cadences and speech patterns was uncanny. Why does Doctor Who work so well when doing a Doctor Light episode? Good writing and the ability to get actors to really perform. Yes, however unpopular Love and Monsters is, I do love it so, and it is on my top 10 of the show since its return. Although it does return to a pattern of the 11th Doctor, in as much as this Doctor does have real or perceived by others to have a quality about him of being a bit of a cold-hearted fellow when he needs to be. This seems to be something that is hit on again and again. Riversong taking out the silence, the tape loop of the silence during the moon landing, telling the TARDIS to go get him, girl, with regard to House. Now this with keeping the Amy of 36 years hence outside. I'm unsure how I feel about this trait of his. Now on to Torchwood. Regarding Torchwood from a week or so ago, I have refrained from emailing in about these stories to avoid spoilers. Not that people on that side of the pond are as generous with self-editing. There is many a day when I've had to shut off Facebook, Google Plus and Twitter. I am going on the premise that everyone here has watched episode 10 of Torchwood Miracle Day. If not, bugger off. I'll wait while you go. Whistles a random tune, inspecting fingernails, looking for emery ball, filing a snag. Okay, ready. My review overall on Torchwood is, boy, it was padded. Although my wife did not mind the softcore porn that I understand was edited out, much to the consternation of, and with much gnashing of teeth by fans of John Barrowman. And in fact, fans of Male Anatomy in general. What a run-on sentence. My grammar teacher would be furious. The padding, I understand to some degree, as the story was longer in runtime than even the War Games. But that said, this is pure RTD at his best and his worst. Best, the heart-wrenching plots line of Gwen's father. Also Andy sitting with the unknown teenage girl. Lastly, the location scout. That was a lovely house that Gwen and Reese lived in at the beginning. The worst, I don't have that kind of time to write in an email, so here's so let's hit some of the highlights or lowlights. Oswald, there is no real good use for this character. Taking aside his crime and where we meet him in the beginning of the series, and this character really brings nothing to the plot that couldn't have been worked out with a few smartly written lines. Rex, the stereotypical one-dimensional character. He loves his life, loses said life in a fashion, falls in love with Vera, loses Vera, meets his father after years apart, and basically does it for a drug run with nothing said thereafter.
Yep.
Don't even bring up the whole arresting Torchwood in Wales fiasco. The fact that the writers took personal politics and moulded their view to fit what they view to be bad guys, i.e. the Tea Party candidate Ellis Hartley Monroe, espousing everything that in real life they are against. It does, however, fit the political views of RTD to shoehorn this in. I'm going to stop this line of thought before more bile comes up and ruins Torchwood for me even more. One more thing. Was the fact that Rex came back from the dead a real shock to anyone? That was typical RTD malarkey. Excellent use of the word malarkey.
Mm. No.
See what words I have to use to fit the editing scheme that you follow. Adam, I'm saving you from bleeping. The end of the show was just typical fizzle rather than a big bang.
Yeah.
Yep. RTD has said that this is it for Torchwood. Well, we can see that it isn't from the end of the story. Plan B and Rex being immortal, or is he a fixed point in time as well? My fervent hope is that it goes back to Series 2, which was vastly underrated in my view, or that he gets his shortcomings and just writes for the show with a firm hand there to guide and edit as necessary, in other words, as very necessary. Thus endeth the rant. Will I watch it again? Maybe. Will I buy the DVD? Probably, but I am a fan. Will I cancel the Stars channel now this series is over? Already done. Looking forward to the rest of Series 32 as much as I am sure whoever is reading this email is looking forward to the end of it. Andre T. Now rest your voice. I am off to have a Twinkie and Mountain Dew.
On Andre's letter, I think there's one thing he raises that I quite find interesting, and I must admit I did think of with the girl who waited. For a lot of people that are only into this season of Who, or knew Who, there's elements of Matt Smith's portrayal of the Doctor in this half of the season that seem quite disjointed, but remind me very, very much of the early Hartnell.
Oh, right.
Because he was very selfish. He would have slammed the door in the face of Amy and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And would have had that same kind of like vicious look on his face. Because the Hartnell Doctor was very self-centred at the beginning and he softened with his assistants.
Yeah.
And that there has been a couple of times where I've sat there thinking, there are heartbacks that possibly a lot of the viewers now would not be aware of because I haven't had the opportunity to see the Hartnell stories. In terms of the Doctor, it's not a new character trait.
This harsh streak.
It's an old character trait we haven't seen for an awful long time.
Maybe, but he didn't really have a choice, did he, in that case?
No, but it's the way it's been done and it's not just that one time.
No,
We've had a letter from Nick.
Hi there, Nick.
Hello again, Staggerers. The mighty Stetson-wearing head of Pertwee. Cardboard Amy's and various plastic nom-knackerers.
And Graham.
And, no, Graham's not mentioned.
Oh, poor Graham.
Back again for some quick-fire reviews of Let's Kill River, or The Vast Toffee, judging from some of the discourse online, and Night Terrors, here we go. Let's Kill Hitler. Rating... Brilliant.
Wow.
Favourite lines. Well, I was on my way to this gay gypsy bar mitzvah for the disabled when I suddenly thought, gosh, the Third Reich's a bit rubbish. I think I'll kill the Führer. Who's with me? That was a good line.
It's a Blackadder, isn't it?
Yeah. The Doctor. Rory, take Hitler and put him in the cupboard over there now. Do it. Rory Williams. Right, I'm putting Hitler in the cupboard. Cupboard, Hitler, Hitler, cupboard, come on! Favourite scenes, fish fingers and custard in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Rory punching Hitler.
Yeah.
Rory putting Hitler in the cupboard.
Yeah.
The Doctor dying. I shouldn't have, but I did shed a few tears. I did the same in Impossible Astronaut and sobbed from the radiation chamber sequence onwards when my doctor said goodbye at the end of Time Part 2. Yes, I'm a soft touch. Me, and if she admits it, fake Keith as well on the radiation chamber bit.
Oh, God, yeah. Not the Let's Go Hitler bit.
Night Terrors. Rating? Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Favourite line? through crimson stars and silent stars and tumbling nebulous like oceans set on fire, through empires of glass and civilizations of pure thought and a whole terrible, wonderful universe of impossibilities. You see these eyes, they're old eyes, and one thing I can tell you, Alex, monsters are real.
I've got an itchy nose.
To that,
sorry.
Favorite scenes: dirty, evil Purcell being sucked up by the carpet while Bernard isn't bothered. Typical dog. We have the open the cupboard. We can't open the cupboard. You know what? We should open the cupboard. George being saved by Dad.
Yeah.
I will return with quickfire reviews of The Girl Who Waited and The God Complex. Regards, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, Nick. Right, I've got another one from Chris here.
Oh, hi, Chris.
Another Chris. He made two this one.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, hi to Staggering Stories and the head of Smith with the coat over mouth.
Yep. What? Pardon?
Try avoid getting the
oh, yes.
No messing about. Let's get on with this.
Yep.
The Girl Who Waited. I think it goes something like this. Dear Karen, the greatest moment in your acting career so far, in script form. Lots of love, Tom McCree. Planet of the Coffee Shops. Great gag to start with. Into the Room and the giant time glass, which looks brilliant. The views of Doctor and Amy looking at each other through this look exceptional, as do all the rest of the digital effects in this. Hmm. I can't think where they ever looked better. The two time streams were used to terrifying effect too. Rory, I love you. Now save me. A very nice line. Rory got some more glasses. Glasses are cool. Rory Cam, a very clever idea.
Hello, handsome man.
And we have Imelda Staunton as the voice of the interface, continuing the very talented actors in voiceover roles.
Yes.
The handbots looked beautiful. Another splendid job from Barbara Kidd, and scarily, especially the secondary delivery system and, again, flawless CGI. Mm. And then we meet older Amy. I'd like to point something out which is a bit obvious but needs to be said. Karen Gillan is 23. I'm 23. I don't know where...
You can't have
her. I'm 23, and I don't know where I'd begin to play a version of myself that's 40 years old. Sorry, 36, a very good line. It's unbelievable. She stands different, she walks different, and wow, she's embittered. There's so much, if not more, difference between old Amy and young Amy as there is between Amelia and Amy when we first meet her in the 11th hour. That got me thinking. Because Amy had a lot of tragic incidents in her life, she believes her husband has been removed from all existence and only through a quirk of fate manages to bring him back. She's seen the doctor apparently killed and had her baby taken away from her. And now, no, she won't get Melody back as she was... And now she's been without the two people she can most rely on, Rory and the Doctor, for 36 years. This has revolutionised my beliefs in her ability as an actress. And they were by no means small beforehand, I promise you. All the Amy hating the Doctor stuff was very hard to listen to. Very hard. Woman with a sword, don't push it. Not to be outdone by his television wife completely, Arthur Darvall has an amazing rant at the Doctor. Wow, like Matt Smith, Arthur can do angry very well. Perfect sequence number one. The two Amys talking through the time glass. Such a beautifully emotional scene and extremely clever too. Mm-hmm. If you're watching carefully, young Amy is trying to gauge whether there has been any of her left in old Amy. Thus the line, Rory's the most brilliant, beautiful man I've ever met. By doing that, she can come back at her older self with the line, you're Amy, he's Rory, thereby planting the seeds of her own rescue. I'm going to pull time apart for you. That's a real punch-the-air moment. And this is a temporal earthquake time. Sometimes knowing your future enables you to change it. A bit of a retelling for the Doctor, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're bloody-minded, contradictory and completely unpredictable. So basically, if you're Amy then. Yes, if anybody could defeat predestiny, it's your wife. And both Amys get to do the Macarena.
The Macarena. I forgot the Macarena.
More surprising than funny. And what was funny was all the double speak with the two Amys, and like Day of the Moon, we have a slow motion killing stuff. At this point, I must say Nick Hearn did an astonishing job directing this. Please come back soon. Perfect sequence number two. Old Amy and Rory talking through the TARDIS door. Quite finished?
Yes, carry on.
Enough coke?
The one hand appearing on the window. And aww, he responds.
Very Titanic-like, wasn't
it? Oh, it was,
for a completely different reason.
Yeah. I'm filling up just writing this. And she begs him not to let her in. This is like the end of Cold Blood, except for it's Amy just outside the door and Rory can't get to her. And then she has immense bravery to face down those advancing handbots. I hope she's resting in peace wherever she is. Karen Gillan deserves not one, but two BAFTA nominations for this performance. Thank you, Karen, and thank you, Tom McCree, for writing a wonderful, emotionally intense story this era has ever produced. Ta-ta for now. Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you,
Chris.
Thank you.
One thing we forgot to mention was loads of people have said, oh, well, Rory waited for her for 2,000 years. He did it by choice.
Big difference. Can I ask Karen something? Yes. Karen, having thank not you. Had children...
I have.
Me not having children...
You're one of their godmother, for Christ's sake.
I can't answer this question, but if your child was stolen from you and you had the fortitude of mind to rip the universe apart to do what you wanted and were bloody-minded, wouldn't you be going after your child by now?
Well, I said before when we reviewed that episode that they wouldn't have got the baby out of my arms. She gave it up far too easily.
And the fact there's lots... It's almost like the kid has... Oh, I know she's grown up, but if you find her... We bring her back. Anyway, I'm going to carry on.
Well, they did grow up with her.
I've never been happy with the way they dealt with the whole baby thing.
It just doesn't sit right. So I've not had that maternal thing about. But what I've seen of parents, of mothers of children, is they will rip the universe apart to get their child. And
when he ran off,
to
the TARDIS saying, "I know where she is," I'd have been in it before he was. Yeah. You know, there's no way he would have gone without me.
We may see more, which we didn't see in Impossible Astronaut, to do with that. I suspect we will, but who knows?
Any more feedback?
Yeah, we have one here from Mr. M again.
Hello, Mr. M again.
Hello, team. Hello. So, two new Torch Who Eps to talk about. But first, why are you reviewing the episodes before they've been properly shown on TV?
when the podcast came out, it had been shown.
I can understand why you did that with Tortured Miracle Day, well, with the US broadcast, but with the new Who episodes, there's no time for people to get their feedback in. Oh, well.
You can feedback after it's been on, and then you can criticise us for our comments.
Yes, absolutely. Tortured Miracle Day, Episode 9, was strange. That's all I can say, really.
Okay.
I don't really think I can say anything else about it.
If the best you can say it was strange, that's not that bad.
So, I'm tired of waiting. It's time for The Girl Who Waited. It was good. It was very good. Then it sort of went a bit wobbly. But then it was brilliant. But what was it with the constant double Amy fetish at the BBC? First of all, the comic relief, then flesh Amy, then Amy was tessellated, and now we have old Amy. Bit strange, but yes, a good episode.
Could it be leading into more than one Doctor?
Maybe.
Duplicates.
I don't think it was as good as I thought it was going to be. 8 out of 10. I think I'd give a roundup of favourite episodes so far. Number 1, Astronaut. Number 2, Moon. Number 3, Hitler. Number 4, War. Number 5, Terrors. Number 6, Wife. Number 7, Waited. Number 8, Spot. Number 9,
Spot.
Flesh.
The black spot.
And number 10, People.
Would you please write out the full titles? Some of them could have several answers.
The only spot I could think of was the dog in the kids' reading books.
And now, it's time for a clue.
Ooh.
Over the next few weeks, I'll be revealing my name. But it won't be easy.
Leopold.
Every time I finish some feedback.
Tarquin.
It will end with a PS.
Felix.
Inside this will be a hidden letter.
Ooh.
Once all these have been collected, I might give you a few more clues.
Ooh.
If you can guess them all. But soon all will be revealed. So who am I, really?
I bet you it's going to turn out he's Stephen Moffat.
Come on then. Come what's, on. What's
AJ, Mr. M. PS. This is a kindness. With a C for kindness.
Ooh.
Could that be a clue?
Or is he just really crap at spelling?
Could be.
Are we going to keep a note of these?
Probably not.
So Christopher, Charles...
Colin.
Cuthbert.
Cleopatra.
Yes, we don't know that Mr. M is a Mr. M.
No. He may be lying. No.
He may be
he hasn't
she.
Lusted after Amy much, no. So it could be a she.
Catherine, with a C.
Coco.
Claire.
Coco.
The clown.
Any more? If any
Cumberpatch.
More. It's Mr. Cumberbatch.
It is. I think that is it for written feedback.
Do we have some of that MP3 technical stuff?
We do.
Have people been zipping files to make your life hell?
They better not have been, Race.
No, but I did have some M4As and that. I had a hell
who
of a time
that?
Converting.
Who was it?
It was Adrian.
Adrian, oh. Sort it out.
We do MP3s, not MP4s. We're not watching them, we're listening to them.
Right, we have some audio feedback here from Adrian.
Hello, Adrian.
Hello, team.
Hello.
This is Adrian calling from America.
Hello, America.
Los Angeles, California, the land of fruit and nuts.
We like
take
Los
that
Angeles.
As you will. Just some feedback on Torchwood Miracle Day, or as I like to call it, Touchwood Miracle Grow. All I really have to say about the last couple episodes is meh. Because, I mean, really?
Yeah.
What have we learned?
Nothing.
I've learned that, well, Jack likes to get naked. That's about it.
That.
You know, and hey, fair is fair. I mean, equal time. You know, where's Esther? Where's her time? You know, everyone else is getting naked. So it's not fair to her.
No.
That said, I guess we'll see. I mean, I do like the series, even though, well, Jack hasn't done much but take his clothes off. You know.
It's contract.
And I realize now, after seeing 8 episodes, that they probably could have done them in 4.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Be seeing you. Bye.
Bye.
Adrian, were you driving?
It sounds like you're in a car while you're recording.
Or that you'd
that.
Stolen an underground train. Sorry, a subway train.
Could be.
He might have been we hope if you were doing that in a car, you were the passenger and you were not working your laptop whilst driving,
no,
which in your country is not illegal, but
bad.
Over here his class is insane.
We have a bit of a PS from that one.
Oh.
PS. Haha, dear team again. One last thing about Torchwood, Touchwood, Miracle Day, Miracle Grow. I'm not buying the whole Gwen action heroine thing.
Aww.
You know, the rocket launcher out of her purse, and now the, you know, blowing up the overflow camp and the dramatic, you know, close-up on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very 1980s television, very A-Team, I guess you would say. Very Knight Rider. But I'm not buying it. Yeah. And also, well, didn't she just explode a bunch of doctors? That seems like a bad thing.
They were nasty doctors.
All right. Be seeing you again. Adrian. Bye.
I think calling it Torchwood is actually probably more apt.
And he's got a bit of Doctor Who feedback here.
Oh, lovely.
Just Adrian again.
Yeah.
Dude.
Well, team, I would apologize, but I did say I'd be seeing you again. Yes, this is Adrian from America.
Out of the car.
This doesn't count as a long Torchwood voicemail. It's Doctor Who feedback.
Yay!
So let's get started. Okay, let's kill Hitler.
Yeah, why not?
Or Mel Brooks, Hitler on Ice. Really, my only response is, Nazis, Hitler, comedy? No. No, just no. And, well, River is batshit crazy. But, of course, to be fair, she was stolen from her mother's womb, raised by aliens who couldn't talk, whom she promptly forgot, stuffed in an astronaut suit, killed a man, went swimming in the Midwest, and then I guess I imagine lived with the rats and homeless people for a while when she was 5 in the rain in New York, and then somehow got over to, you know, well, got across the pond, as it were, and was raising herself with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, well, that is a recipe for Lord of the Flies. You can't really impart wisdom if you don't have any. And of course, it probably didn't help that her homework every night and her weekend retreats and summer holidays and holiday vacations were probably nothing but Here is how you should kill the doctor. That might make a girl a bit crazy.
Just a touch. Maybe.
But, well, guess what? Rory didn't die. Oh my god, he didn't die. Fantastic.
Jamie's job.
But unfortunately, well, the doctor did die.
Yay!
Again.
Shut up, Riddler.
And I'm hoping that Moffat's plan is not to take us back to David Tennant, the end of time, his year-long specials of I'm dying all over again.
No, I'm sure.
I mean, because I really don't want Matt Smith to be playing Kenny and dying every episode for the rest of this season. Don't, you know, yeah, no. Just no, as I said before, just no.
Second that.
And, well, be seeing you. I promise next time, maybe only one voicemail or two. Okay, just three. One. Be seeing you. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thank but. You. He sent another one, hasn't he?
At least he's out of the car now.
Hello, team.
Hello.
Well, this is not a PS. This is an addendum to Adrian's Doctor Who feedback. Haha.
Yeah.
So, well, I have a question.
Go on.
Why is new Crazy River, a.k.a. Mel's, a.k.a. Astronaut Baby, still trying to kill the Doctor?
42.
In her past, his future, she already succeeded.
Maybe.
Unless she just can't break the training, or it's just too fun. Or the silence, whoever they are, because it seems like they are now more than just the Van Gogh scream aliens. Perhaps they are trying to have her still try to kill the Doctor earlier in his timeline, thereby, you know, putting some cracks in the universe, or paradoxes or something, I don't know. Perhaps whoever the silence is, who I guess also engineered the TARDIS exploding, which led to Big Bang 2, perhaps they want the universe to keep getting rebooted until whatever their goal is happens. Perhaps someone or something is trying to come back or become real, like the Time Lords or the Master or the Dream Lord. I don't know. I really don't know.
There we go.
So, moving on from that, well, I guess we now have our answer, or Moffat's answer, as to whether River or not can come back from being absorbed into the library matrix. The answer is no. She has used up all her lives to save the Matt Smith doctor.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some continuity thing where it showed that how that's possible. I don't know it myself. But since she has done that, she has no more bodies to go back to. So she is only library matrix energy after she gets absorbed. There's nowhere to go back to unless, of course, the doctor wants to make her a little cyberwoman body or stick her into K-9 or something. But let's not go there. Or I guess Idris and River could hang out in the TARDIS vortex, whatever.
Mingle a bit.
Okay. Basically, River is going to die, and there you go. That's it.
It's happened.
Yeah.
Or so it seems. Okay, moving on, and be seeing you. Bye.
Be seeing you.
Bye again. Bye.
It was Munch, wasn't it, actually?
Yes.
What was that film about the guy that met the girl and he jumps in and out of
time? Traveller's Wife.
Because I'm starting... Yeah, and it was a film.
The film was rubbish, granny.
I'm starting to get the feeling with River that she's become a self-fulfilling prophecy, i.e. the Doctor gives her... her name, because that's the name he knows her by.
Oh, that,
and it's almost like the Time Traveller's Wife. He's almost making his own wife.
Yes. Yeah, and all that stuff about her having regenerations left wouldn't have mattered, because in Forest of the Dead, the Doctor would have died as well. He wouldn't have survived by regenerating in that case.
Mm. Yeah.
So even if she had regenerations left, she was still a goner.
Yeah.
Either way, I think.
So any more feedback?
We have one from Reese.
Yo, Reese!
Hi, Reese. Let's hope it's not a zip file.
It's not a zip file.
Good man.
Hello, team. It's Reese.
Hi, Reese.
I've got to review Tortured Miracle Day Episode 8 and also The Night Terrors, Doctor Who, The Night Terrors. So I'm going to leave Episodes 9 and 10 of Miracle Day for next time, because I think that might act as some sort of closing two-parter. I just get that feeling. Also, Episode 10 has aired worldwide, even here in Australia, but I can't watch it because I don't get cable. And the annoying thing is I got spoiled on a plot thread. I'll tell you what one later, but I'm just going to talk about the episode. I loved it. I mean, maybe love is a bit too much, but I love certain bits, like dialogue and interactions between the characters. But my favourite bits have to be having Wayne Knight and John Delancey on screen together. I posted online can we just take a moment to appreciate the awesomeness that is having Wayne Knight and John Delancey on the same screen? Two awesome guys from my childhood. Of course, dead. We all know I'm a huge Stargate fan, and John Delancey did a fantastic job as... I'm blanking on the character name. But he did a fantastic job in Stargate. And Wayne Knight will always be the character from Space Jams or whatever it is, the Looney Tunes cartoon movie. And human. So, you know, two kind of childhood actors I've seen on screen together doing fantastic jobs, and one of my favourite scenes of Torchwood ever, one of my favourite light-hearted scenes from Torchwood, would have to be the banter between John Delancey and the Torchwood team, specifically when they first meet. Brilliant stuff. Not going to go too in-depth, just going to say really liked it. If you want to catch a review, you can hear that on my podcast, which is Who's a Man Podcast, available at Who's a Man Podcast at wordpress.com or Libsyn, or find it on iTunes or join the Facebook group. Shameless plug over. I only did that because Adam said I have to plug my podcast a bit more. So
you should.
Really liked it. Completely agree with Fake Keith that Miracle Day is excellent. Don't quite agree with her that it's better than Children of Earth. I mean, they're equal in my mind. Both absolutely brilliant for different reasons. I've said it before, again, on my podcast, Who's a Mad Podcast.wordpress.com. Children of Earth, I love it. But this I love just because the character developments and because, call me pervy, but Alexa Havens is Esther and, of course,
Dead.
Eve is Gwen are quite attractive. But, you know, excellent character stuff, and I've said it also before on my podcast, and feedback here, John Barrowman used to be quite cheesy. He used to be, I'm Captain Jack, I'll float with anything, woohoo! Kind of character in the first two seasons, but in Children of Earth and in this, he's been given a chance to act, I think. I mean, the scene beside Angelo's bed was wonderful. Wonderful acting from him. Also, wonderful music from Murray Gold. I know I parrot on about his music so much, but it's true, he just does stunning jobs. There's a piece that's very reoccurring. It's got piano playing on it, but there's a synthesizer kind of underneath it backing it, and it's wonderfully done, but he adds some sort of Spanish or Italian guitar to it. Lovely stuff. That's pretty much what I have to say. I have done a full review on my podcast. I have mentioned that already. You're probably getting tired of it now. I'm turning into Professor Dave whenever he used to mention his podcast. It was iTunes, Libsyn, and Zoom. Anyway, moving on to Night Terrors. First time I saw this, I was disappointed.
Oh, really?
I'd read too much internet hype, I can probably say that. I thought, oh good, we're going to have scary Doctor Who again. Standalone, but scary Doctor Who, and we didn't quite get the scary. Not as scary as people said. There are some scenes that are kind of creepy and unsettling, but not blink, make you go, oh god, kind of moments. And jump out of the chair and hit the ceiling and have to be scraped off, which I have to admit was the case with me when Blink aired. But also the same with Midnight. In fact, Midnight was a different kind of scared. It was behind the sofa kind of scared. Two different kind of mixes there. Anyway, I think it was still pretty good. I mean, it plays upon primal fear of, you know, just, as Mark Gatiss said, things that aren't completely complete or there. Or, in my case, I've got a very irrational fear of the dark still. Had it since I was young, and I don't think it's ever going to go away. The shadows and the dolls walking down the hallways, the corridors in the darkness, was very good. Also, I felt uncomfortable watching the scenes where they were crowding around George. Because, you know, it's a little kid surrounded by these kind of really abnormal, freaky things. Even if I'm supposed to be scared by it, I had this almost protective urge to go, oh my god, that's not right. A really fatherly sense is coming through for me. But also, it came through from Daniel May's. Well done to him.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in Ashes to Ashes. In fact, I haven't even seen Ashes to Ashes.
I do kind of know
what his character is. I'm hoping I haven't been completely spoiled and he is the devil. I have been very careful listening to your podcast, and thank you for being very considerate in one of your feedback sections and actually bleeping what happens in the final episode, because I'm planning to see Life on Mars from the beginning all the way up to Ashes to Ashes, and I may give you reports on the episodes or perhaps seasons as I go. Maybe a season summary, because they're quite short.
Yeah.
Could be better than me reviewing individual episodes for you. Because you guys and the people over at the Flesh and Blade podcast, your responses and reactions to the finale has made me so interested to go and see it. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and get my hands on them. Back to Doctor Who. I think that he did a great job in this, Daniel Mace.
He did.
I've been told he did a good job in Ashes to Ashes, but if this is anything to go for, I'm in for a treat for talent in Ashes to Ashes, because he played the, you know, almost mundane, normal, okay, here we are, routine kind of life then we have this weirdo in the Doctor coming along and, you know, all that stuff. I think he did a great job, but my favourite bit is him coming to terms with, even though his son's an alien, his son, in inverted commas, is an alien, he will still run down the stairs and save his little kitty from monsters. That is gorgeous bit of drama, gorgeous bit of writing, gets you at the heart. And being a boy, I can remember being that young, and if that ever really happened to me, I knew my daddy would do that. I mean, he probably will now, but it won't be that sort of covered with the word daddy. It would be, thanks for saving me from those thugs, Dad. Now let's get out of here before they realise you're not that big and tough. No, I didn't mean that. But, you know, yeah, it was so touching. But also, that scene is possibly my favourite in the episode. I mean, there are some great scenes and great bits of dialogue, like the Doctor asking for another Jammy Dodger, which I hope is going to become a recurring thing in Gatter scripts. But the music there, I know I've said it before that Murray's a genius, but amazing stuff. And I think Daniel Mays physically got that fight across that he's going to... I mean, I know he was running down saving this little kid and they were acting doing that, but I think I got that sense that he was doing that for his little boy. And even though they're acting, he made it seem like that young little Jamie, I think it is, was his little lad. And I have to admit, he's quite bonkers, isn't he? In the Confidential, he was quite mad. So to sum up, this episode went from one that I thought that was okay, kind of disappointed it wasn't as scary as people had said, to one I adore. In fact, I can say I adore it just for the drama and the comedy moments. It's lighthearted, then you can get drama. If you're young, if I was younger, maybe I'd be scared. If I was George's age, an eight-year-old boy, I probably would be behind the sofa, and then I'd kind of be looking to my daddy who's next to me saying, would you do that, Daddy? Would you save me from monsters? And he'd say yes. Lovely writing from Mark Gatiss there. So thank you, Mark. And also to sum up, I'd just like to say, I remember when season 5 had ended, posting something either on your Facebook page wall or Adam's, the podcast's Facebook page wall, Adam's, saying, oh, look, this certain actor who's been in the BBC Robin Hood series, don't throw things at me, Gene. Sorry to bring it up again. He's going to turn up in the next season of Doctor Who. He's playing a Purcell, so obviously they know about you. I didn't know it would be so accurate. I'm not going to start picking on you like the rest of your good friends and pals in the studio did. Well, I say studio. No. But I was surprised when I went, okay, that's Adam's doppelganger. Just make him lose several pounds and wear smarter clothes, and that would be Adam.
What, make Adam lose, though?
Quite freaky. Also, this is just a little note to real Keith. I said it on Facebook, but thank you very much for leaving me whenever I go to watch Let's Kill Hitler, and Hitler turns up, for getting this song stuck in my head. Hitler has only got one ball, the other is in the Albert Hall.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith. I'm probably going to have that for years to come now.
We'll have to give him the rest
as
of the
normally happens with
point.
Me, my feedback's gotten far too long, so I shall edit this one down and I'll send it to you unzipped. I'll keep it whopped out. Oops. I'll let you enjoy it. So thank you for the great podcast. Speak to you next time. If the next feedback is long, I give you an apology in advance.
Just don't zip
it. But I also must say that I'm looking forward to the next Doctor Who episode, mainly because it's an Amy episode, not just because I completely love Karen Gillan, as is Adam, but because we need an Amy episode. She's been the, what's that Doctor?
Sidelined,
what's this Doctor?
Yes.
Look out, Doctor. Companion of this season. And I'm speaking rather hurriedly to finish up this feedback. So, yes, goodbye for now, and sorry for my epic waffles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Recently, sure, your epic waffles are lovely.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I hope you enjoyed The Girl Who Waited.
Yes.
We'll find out.
Okay, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so by writing to show
at
staggeringstories.net.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, our last reminder of our competition, which we are going to draw at our next podcast, 116. So 96. We will remind you of the competition, and we look forward to having any more entries. Get them to us. PDQ!
Yes, and we should probably mention who donated the two
signed pictures.
Simon, that's a murder.
El Presidente, who donated the two signed pictures?
It was Dean Hill.
Oh, thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Dean.
Very much appreciated.
Yes.
But yes, send your emails to us within the next week.
Mm-hmm.
And here are the details of the competition. We have a winning prize of a very nice A3 picture of Karen Gillan. A signed photograph of Colin Baker
Baker. May ketchup and mashed potato be upon him.
Wearing the cricketing outfit. Mm. And we have one of Davos, but it's not the original Davos.
It's Terry Malloy.
Yes. So, we have a competition, and we're going to give you a little bit of dialogue from the TARDIS.
Oh, God.
And we want not reams, dear heart. No more than a page of what happens next. And we have two runners-up prizes as well. We will go for the most interesting, the rudest, the funniest, the serious.
The perverse.
So,
got to be able to read it, though.
We have to be able to read it, by the way.
Yes.
So, imagine the scene. The Doctor is fiddling, as always, with the TARDIS console. And in comes Amy. Doctor?
Yes?
You know that big red button on the console you told me and Rory not to touch?
Yes.
Well, Rory hit it and...
Yes.
And...
Yes.
... We want your answers. And what, listeners? And now, as the sun sets on another podcast.
Yay. Long one.
This is Jean saying, barada.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
Posies.
You're a very strange man. I say man.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 115. Featuring Adam J. Purcell, Fake Keith, Gene Riddler, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speaker, and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended. This podcast is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Oh, it's a blank space where Crumbly used to be.
Ah,
wasn't his car, was it?
Nah. Do you know you're sick bastard, really, aren't you?
I would say I'm the quiet, but no,
I didn't head on the quiet, but yeah.
I was echoey last time, just me.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what happened to that, but you were echoey.
Echo,
never mind.
No, he sounded like he was in a box somewhere.
Maybe. He was.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
We did keep him in a box that particular week. That looks quite good, the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
It does.
Really good reviews.
Mm. Yeah.
I saw the trailer for it and thought, ooh.
Go and see Troll Hunter.
Troll Hunter.
Well, it's about a troll hunter in Norway, and the first thing is that it's in Norwegian with English subtitles. But there's a translation problem when it comes to some of the names of the trolls that completely ruin the film. One of the trolls is called a tosser lad. And at that point, everybody was giggling. And after that, nobody was taking it seriously.
I went and saw Aliens and Cowboys and Aliens.
That was all right. Was
Daniel Craig was rugged.
Oh, wasn't he just? He still has a waist that shouldn't be allowed on anyone over the age of 14.
Lovely eyes as well.
Oh, yes. And I thought old Harrison Ford was quite good.
He's always good.
Yeah.
And he's always got lovely eyes.
Yeah.
And a fine body. And a cheeky smile.
Keith, we found her fantasy figure.
Yeah, I know. I get this all the time.
Oh,
Planet of the Apes.
He hasn't got as fine a body as you.
Ah, there we go. Actor Whitfield.
Whitfield, that was it.
June Whitfield. Yeah. She's Spartacus.
She is Spartacus.
Yeah, okay. So's her wife.
And so's Terry.
I've seen some of those. I didn't realise it was the lad that was the lead.
Yeah. Damn fine six-pack on that boy. Wears a loincloth.
But the look on Lucy Lawless's face when they do the scene of inspection, it was more than a six-pack that he had.
Oh, yeah.
That was fine. They tended to look at the virility of their soldiers back then.
And you'd get this rear shot going along this line of naked men who all looked like they were clenching.
Probably were.
Yeah. You ain't seeing nothing. My mother might be watching this.
You cry well.
You do. Okay, thank you.
You do a good whimper. A fine whimper.
I learned whimpering off Karen Gillan.
So, to news. Doctor Who news.
Oh.
No. You have to say so to the news with El Presidente and
then
pause so we can put the music in.
I apologise. I'll start again.
Okay.
So, Torchwood next?
Yeah.
Oh, can we do Doctor Who first? Because Torchwood's going to finish me off.
And the two stories we have been
you
watching...
You forgot to pause for music!
I don't know!
And then start a new sentence! So you did this last time, when I was editing, and that was so annoying.
Children!
It was 1 o'clock in the morning when I got to that bit. 1 o'clock, and I nearly rung you up.
Are there no pause buttons on the editing equipment?
Yes, but then I insert the music and suddenly you're starting in the middle of a sentence, so it makes you sound silly. I'm only thinking of you.
Like that's ever stopped you from making me sound silly.
I've never made you sound silly.
Apart from which, we're ranting, which is not going to make it easy for Adam
this is
to
true.
Edit this.
I don't care, I'm not editing.
Aren't you?
Why are you drawing a darling?
Because I can. I used to draw these all over my notebooks at school. I drew the Dalek.
Let's have a look at your Dalek.
Nude one.
It's a proper
it's
Dalek.
A proper Dalek.
It's no Teletubby Dalek or I Dalek.
I think we should offer a prize to anyone who can find the wardrobe malfunction.
Ooh. He's got pictures of Carrington and everywhere. They're in the bathroom, they're on his computer, he's on his palm.
On his bedroom ceiling.
On his anywhere, you can't move for them.
I can reach them.
We saw Rory, you didn't.